Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a History Meets True Crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I am joined by Beau. And I'm Josh. And what we're going to be talking about today is what makes good art. And what I've done is I've made a sort of chronological list starting from modernity and going all the way back to sort of classical era and sort of prehistoric art, I suppose. And I've picked out some of the most interesting examples to me. I'm not necessarily a massive... I'm not an art buff. However, I know a thing or two. And hopefully I picked out some interesting things and you can learn a little bit about art history whilst we probably tear apart some revered pieces of art and probably big up some of the older ones. There's certainly some things in here that I really like and hopefully there will be for you as well.
Yeah, I mean, I like art history. It's one of the things, if I could sort of go back and have my time again, be an undergrad again, I may well pick art history rather than out-and-out classics. Mm-hmm. It's a bit more niche. But being into ancient history particularly, or history in general, it's impossible to really miss art history. At some point, you're going to have to come across it. So I think this is really interesting, bit of sort of a whistle-stop tour, a whirlwind tour of art history. Mm-hmm. One thing I think is interesting here is you've pick the question, what makes good art?
Yes.
I think that's an important distinction to make right away, is that we're not asking what is art. Mm-hmm. We're asking what is, or is it possible to even have an answer to, what is good art? They're two very different questions.
Yes, I mean, for what is art, I feel like there's a certain amount of navel-gazing involved in the question, in that the colloquial understanding of what art is pretty much what 99% of people operate under. So why would you sort of subvert that? I mean, on a canvas, maybe a sculpture, things of that nature, people understand that that is art. Whereas what makes good art, well, that requires you to have a good understanding of the subjective, and particularly your own interpretation of what is good, what you like. Right. And you've got to be able to weigh that up against, well, what do most people value? So it's a sort of difficult question to answer, because obviously it's down to your own subjective taste. Mm-hmm. However, if you're trying to answer what makes good art, you've also got to factor in how you might differ from the general population, what most people might agree is actually good.
Right, yeah. So the question, what makes good art, is you really, the word good there is probably the most important. Like, what is good? I mean, there's whole philosophies about what it means that if things are good or the best.
And if you want to learn about that, me and Thomas did a philosophy of aesthetics that might come in handy for that, if you want to watch that after this.
So the question of, like, what is art changes over time. And of course, mm-hmm. in the modern world, it's a very difficult, slippery question, because it's relatively easy to argue that almost anything can be art.
Okay, yes, and we will certainly see that.
So you have to concede that ground. But where I think you can sort of make a stand is what makes good art, because as you say, it's subjective, or the old adage, the old cliche, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. It's just up to you what you think is good.
Well, it's
good.
Not entirely in the eye of the beholder.
Right, exactly. Otherwise, this conversation, that would be the end of the conversation, wouldn't it, if that were all there were to it. Hopefully we can go through and give our thoughts and opinions. Mm-hmm.
So what I'm going to start with first is contemporary art, which is from about the 1970s till the present day. And this first one is something that is trying not to seem like it's from that period. This is titled Untitled Film Still Number 21 from 1978, and it's by Cindy Sherman. And Sherman works exclusively in photographic self-portraits, so that is the artist herself there. in what I presume to be New York. And she did. She was both the creator, director, makeup artist, hairstylist, the wardrobe, and of course the model in the picture as well. So she basically created everything. And what she was trying to do is create these sort of fake film stills and use it as almost like a
vanity project.
Well, to some extent, I imagine. However, I imagine it's pretty cost effective to do it all yourself. And I think it's not necessarily what you imagine when you think of contemporary art, is it? That you go to something like this, where it's almost playing off of classic film. And it's not necessarily a bad shot. You can see that the intention is to seem like the director. Obviously, the director is her, but trying to make her look like a sort of heroic figure amongst the big tall buildings in the background.
Well, it's exactly like it is a still from a Hitchcock film, isn't it?
Yes.
From 20 years earlier or 30 years earlier or something, yeah.
So, yeah, this comes from something known as the Untitled Film Series, which is a series of 69 black and white photographs of herself as the heroine of various 1950s style Hollywood films.
So that's exactly what it is.
Yes.
Because I've never heard of this person before or anything.
But this is, for contemporary art, this is slightly closer to what you would imagine art actually is. It's not, you know, a banana sellotape to a wall. There's some effort in the creative process.
There's been a tiny bit more effort made, yeah. I mean, I don't think that most photo or video art is any good.
No?
Most of it. Sometimes it is, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just my opinion. I mean, there's the question of if it makes you feel something. It doesn't necessarily have to be a positive feeling. But if it makes you feel something, if it moves your mind, your emotions... Well, it could just be purely intellectual. You don't have to have an emotional reaction to it. But most video art that I've seen, and most photo art, is just nothing. Like, I look at that image, for example. I'm like, yeah, there's some sort of some artistic eye has been used to sort of frame it and stuff. But is that good? It's not that good, is it? Is that of any real value? No. Any A-level art student can do that.
Well, this is the higher bar for contemporary art, unfortunately. So it's all downhill from here. So if we move on to the next one, we've got a Banksy, which is titled Shop Until You Drop. And I know you're not a fan of Banksy, and to be honest, neither am I. I think it's basically just vandalism. I mean, people are normally delighted because it's very expensive vandalism for some reason, in that you can sell it for lots of money and it could be a tourist attraction for some reason. But I've always thought it funny that the hard work isn't actually in him just spraying onto the wall, it's in making the stencil.
Yeah, yeah, right. I was just going to say exactly that, yeah.
So the hard work isn't...
Stencil art is... Really?
Mm-hmm.
You used a stencil to do something. Well done, infant. Yeah, but actually the making of the stencil, now that's something else. That is actually probably... Well, that does require skill, doesn't it?
I imagine cutting around the hair in particular is probably not the easiest thing to do. And obviously the message of this is entirely obvious. It's like a commentary against consumerism, isn't it? And I mean, wow, so profound. You've really blown my mind.
I feel like Banksy's sort of political message is stupid. It's that of an intellectually stunted minnow. It's really childish. It's stupid. It's so obvious, so painfully on the nose nearly every single time. Like, a couple of times I've seen a Banksy and I've sort of, it's been funny. It's actually made me snigger a bit. But beyond that, it's of no real value as far as I'm concerned, monetary or otherwise.
Yeah, and I think the message trying to be conveyed here would be far better conveyed through literary means, for it to be written down and argued rather than visually represented. I feel like one thing that makes good art is the fact that it's using the art form in the best possible way, as in this is the best way we could communicate this particular message. If you're just using art for the sake of it, in this case, clearly a written essay would communicate the flaws of consumerism better than this. I mean, what can you really get out of this other than consumerism bad?
So the level of it, isn't it? That's how
like
deep it is.
That would be like the title of an essay, where you've actually got to get into the weeds of why it's bad, your argument, your evidence. But there's none of that here. It's just, you know, they've got a bottle of wine, maybe some jewellery and what looks like a wallet in there. So it's pretty arbitrary.
It's about as shallow as you can get. It's pretty infantile. It's like someone super gluing themselves to the roof of a tube train to make a point. It's like a toddler would think it's a good idea. That's what I think about Banksy.
I think you're being too kind, really. So this next one is Portrait of an Artist, and in brackets, Paul with two figures. And as you can see, that's exactly what it is. It's very nice looking pool over what looks like the sort of California hills, I would imagine. And judging from how much it sold for, I imagine that David Hockney, the artist behind this, is probably living there at the minute. So in 2018, this was actually sold at Christie's, an auction house in New York, for $90 million. And does that strike you as being worth $90 million?
Oh, no, the monetary value of these things is completely absurd, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Blown out of all proportion. But at least you can see that there is some skill. Hockney isn't sort of laughably bad. I actually quite like the paintings of Edward Hopper.
Yeah, so do I.
Which are similar-ish. Mm-hmm. Level.
It's not really going for complete realism.
No.
But it's sort of a stylized realism, isn't it?
Yeah, right, exactly. And again, some sort of an artistic eye has been brought to the composition. But yeah, so while it may not be as good as sort of a high Renaissance master, mm-hmm. it's not supposed to be. At least it says something. Like you can see in that image that you could, without too much of a stretch, infer all sorts of things, couldn't you, if you wanted to. You couldn't get any of that from a Banksy stencil, could you?
I think the expression of the guy stood over the pool is sort of contemplative, like watching the person quite solemnly almost.
Yeah, well, it's an enigmatic expression, isn't it?
Mm.
And the person in the pool is almost certainly finishing a lap, but they might not be. It might be a body just at the bottom of the,
It does look like they're doing breaststroke.
Yeah, it looks like they're at the very end of a lap.
It also looks like they're swimming in their underpants as well, which is a little bit weird, but who knows?
Yeah.
But yes, this was, at the time, in 2018, the most expensive artwork by a living artist ever sold at auction. So.
Right, and of course not worth that money. I mean, that's absolutely stupid. It's mm-hmm. a canvas with some oil paint on it. But that's the nature of things, isn't it? The nature of sort of the free market. If the market decides it's worth it, someone's prepared to pay that for it. That is sort mm-hmm. of what it's worth, isn't it?
Yes. And there are a few things to say about the sort of monetary element, and I feel like it's important to mention that on the one hand, you've got people saying that it's all a money laundering operation, which I can certainly sympathise with. But on the other, which I think is probably the more convincing argument, is that because they have so much money, the people who buy these sorts of artworks, they're billionaires, it's not really a big dent out of their savings. Yeah. And it's a massive status thing, isn't it? So it's like, well, you might be another billionaire, but you don't have this particular painting.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's a way of them getting one up on their peers when money doesn't make the cut.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Have you ever heard of Steve Wynn, the American billionaire Steve Wynn?
It rings a bell, but not too familiar.
He owns lots of property in Las Vegas. He owns loads of the biggest casinos in Las Vegas. He's a billionaire, mm-hmm. And he's got no taste. None. It's like a comically to a level of having no taste whatsoever. He's got a giant Picasso collection. He collects Picassos, literally collects them. Yeah, another one comes on the market and he'll happily spend tens of millions of dollars on another Picasso because it's nothing to him. It really is literally nothing.
Pocket
doesn't
change,
matter.
Yeah.
I've seen him in an interview saying, what is it you love about Picasso so much? He didn't have a great answer. It's just like, yeah, well, because I'm a collector for the sake of it. It's like when there was a great in the early 20th century, some of the great American collectors, like the Guggenheims or J.P. Morgan or Carnegie or the Vanderbilts or whoever, going around trying to collect European masters, prepared to pay any sort of money for them. for the sake of it. Not because they particularly loved Rubens or Rembrandt, but they it was just the status of owning a Rembrandt, say.
It's funny because this well, sort of status-seeking money, I forgot what the word is, but basically throwing your money around, isn't that antithetical to the whole point of art, isn't it? To demonstrate things above the material, and yet people are using it for basically their own material gains in a weird sort of way, no matter what the art piece is. It could be a Renaissance piece about your relationship with God and doing the right thing, and someone who's a billionaire will pay an inordinate amount of money to hang it in their mansion. And there's a sort of poetic irony there, isn't there?
Yeah, it's funny, actually, you should say. I haven't really thought about that exactly before, but there could be a painting about, like, the evils of greed.
Mm-hmm.
And someone buys it as an investment, you know? Yes, interesting point, actually.
So this next one is one that really annoyed me. This is called Rabbit by Jeff Koons, and this is from 1986. And this sold for $91 million, more than the last one, at Christie's in New York in 2019. And I believe this is the highest auctioning piece of art sold by a living artist ever. And this is known as neo-pop art, apparently.
Is it?
It looks terrible.
I mean, call it whatever you want. It's nonsense, isn't it?
I mean,
I wonder who buy it. Do we know? Is it like a Chinese billionaire or a Russian oligarch type person?
I'm not sure. Right, sometimes if it's at Christie's, they don't actually announce who buys it. Mm-hmm. Because they've got, obviously, billionaires there. They don't want people knowing.
Mm.
And if you bought that, I'd imagine you would want it under wraps because everyone will know that you're a tasteless loser. Because I would say if this were like a little thing and you bought it as like a toy for a child, if you spent over like £1 or £2, that's too much.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand what you get out of this. It's not even a good depiction of a rabbit.
Do we know how big it is, just out of interest? Is it this big or is it massive? Or
I think it's, I don't know, a foot, 2 foot, something like that.
It's just pure nonsense, isn't it? It's the Emperor's New Clothes thing where the art community, whatever that means, says this artist is a great artist. What they've created here is a masterpiece. It's worth a lot of money. People that have got no mind of their own, these Jedi mind tricks work on them, and they've got enough money that they're fooled by it and will start bidding on it. And then once it's sold at auction once for a lot of money, it then has provenance, doesn't it? It's then it's known as a famous thing. And so then it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy or whatever. But it's just absolute nonsense, isn't it?
I don't really understand what's trying to be conveyed here. Is there a message? I don't think there's really anything. But the artist is known for making these sort of metallic-y.
I'm sure the artist could spiel out a few sentences of word soup.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean anything to me if they do that.
You're familiar with international art English?
Right.
But for the people at home, basically it's a style of English language which is renowned even in the art world for just being a load of word salad, loads of nonsense, basically, that is meaningless and very pretentious. And you can go online and you can find the international art English AI generators, and it's indistinguishable from the real thing. In fact, more often than not, there's actually more style and taste shown by the AI than there is by the actual artist.
I can believe that. There's this thing where if you try and push back against that or say that's nonsense, they'll just say, oh, you don't understand. You're not well read enough. And I don't want to be too pompous, but I've read a fair bit of art history in my time. So it's not a case of that, I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Quite often if you say you don't like Jackson Pollock or something, it's like, oh, you don't understand. You simply don't understand what's being done or said here. Not the case. There's one line I'd like to read here from a great art historian, Kenneth Clark, Lord Clark, the father of Alan Clark, not the current Tory politician, Ken Clark, but Lord Kenneth Clark. Talks about how in the pre-modern period, quite often a patron would commission an artist directly. They'd have some sort of conversation about what they want, then the artist would create it. So that there was very little, hardly ever, shouldn't really be any real gap in comprehension between what the patron wanted and what the artist created, or very little gap. Whereas today in our world, there can be a giant gap. Like, we don't really know, really what the artist meant by making that. We don't know what's in the mind of the people that was prepared
to
pay.
That's very interesting, because it does change the dynamic of why they create the art in the first place,
right,
doesn't it?
Right.
I don't want to steal your thunder, but you would imagine that the meaninglessness of the art is because they're making it for no one, no one specific anyway.
And it doesn't have any sense or meaning or really anything.
Yeah.
And the people that buy that nonsense, the joke is sort of on them. He talks about, Kenneth Clark talks about how that didn't used to be the case. This sort of thing wouldn't really fly in the Middle Ages, for example. He says this line, quote, "Our contemporary attitude of pretending to understand works of art in order not to appear Philistines would have seemed absurd to the Florentines," sort of the Renaissance Florentines. I think that's an important thing to be conscious of, is that there's a gap in understanding between whoever created the art and the person that...
And I think that's something that is important, because if your art is incomprehensible, if the meaning is so difficult to pin down that it can only be comprehended by a few people, then it's not particularly good art. I mean, it depends how populist you want to be about it. I mean, you could be really elitist and say, well, if one person gets it, then it's good art. But then I would say that there has to be some level of it stands on its own two feet, and you don't have to have someone explain it to you.
All right.
You have to be able to look at it. Oh, okay, that's what that means.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a History Meets True Crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.